Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The typical conversation with someone is, are you okay? Yeah. Do you want to go for a pint? Okay. And then you talk about anything but the grief that you're in. You might speak about your wife, or you might speak about this, but you don't speak about your grief and how you're feeling.
Welcome back to Grief Encounters. And on this week's episode, we are joined by Tony Owens and Mike Culshaw. Tony Owens and Mike Culshaw will be taking part in a football match in Dalian Stadium in May. But it's not just any ordinary football match. They will represent a team of bereaved fathers who will have the names of the babies that they lost on their jersey. And it's a really, really incredible thing they are doing to raise money for Felicon, an organization that helps families who are dealing with stillbirth and neonatal loss. To say that this conversation is an inspiring one is probably a real understatement, because these two men talk about the grief that they faced losing their children, how they keep their children's name alive, and the importance of talking and sharing experiences together as bereaved fathers. I feel like it's an important episode because we so rarely get the chance to talk to men about how they deal with the loss of a child. And I thank them both for coming in. Dalymount Stadium, otherwise known as the home of Irish football, has seen some really special performances take place in its 120-year history. This May, that trend will continue as guests Tony Owens and Mike Culshaw will represent a team of bereaved fathers as they take on an international team of men who have been affected by stillbirth or neonatal loss. Thank you guys so much for coming onto the podcast. We really appreciate it. I guess just to start off, the origins of this idea and how you guys decided to come together and do something like this. How did this start?
Well, this started when a man called Stephen contacted us from SANS UK, which would be the UK equivalent charity for dealing with stillbirth loss. And Stephen's actually from Dublin, but he's living over in Cardiff, and he's actually a Bowes fan. He'll get more pleasure of playing out Dalymount than any of us other Irish fathers. Especially me, I'm a Rovers fan. So Stephen contacted us. He asked us about, did we need any help setting up a team originally to play in a league? And I said, that might be a bit too much, but we'll definitely play a game, and we'll have yous over, and we'll run an event for Felicon, who was helped all the parents, fathers and mothers, as well as the children. Sometimes the children get left out when people are thinking about people losing a baby. We have to remember that they lost a brother or a sister too. So they contacted us, myself and Anthony. We took her on board and we set up a committee and got the likes of Mike and Ken and Mark and a few others on. We put her out on social media through Facebook, on the Felicon Facebook page, and hoped that we'd get a squad of 16 or so. And we ended up with a squad of 37,
wow,
which is going to be funny on the day, seeing so many people trying to get on. I think it'd be more people trying to get off the pitch, really, because...
Did that surprise you? Because, you know, in any of the conversations we've had with around stillbirth and around, you know, from what people have told me, it's hard to get people to talk or to put themselves forward, because it's a very, very, very difficult experience to get out, like to talk about. Were you surprised to get that response and that many people?
Yeah, I think if we asked for volunteers to come into a room and just talk to other fathers, just to talk, yeah, we wouldn't have got that response. Yeah. It's just through the medium of football that we were able to get it through. And people just look at it as a way of remembering their angels. And like, the most special thing about the game is everybody will have their own individual jersey with their angel's name on the back. So I know I'll be running out with Arthur on the back, and I won't be more proud than any other event I've done. And Mike, I'm sure you're the same.
No, absolutely, and I think you're right. I think losing a baby is a very isolating experience, and we've been very focused on the element of honouring all these babies, rather than it being, you know, a channel for talking. Mm. Although that's ultimately what's coming from it. We're able to all meet up for the training sessions, meet up on the day, and really come together all with this horrific shared experience, and have this opportunity both to proudly wear, you know, our angels' names on our backs, but also in doing that, in the lead up to that, talk and find out a little more about everybody else's stories, and share your own stories as well, which maybe you haven't talked about in great detail to somebody outside of your immediate family before.
Yeah, there's something so powerful about what you guys are doing. I think putting your baby's name on your back and owning that and standing out there and honoring them, it's not an easy thing to do, a beautiful thing to do. A really, really beautiful thing to do for your child and for your family. When you are together, when you guys are together, or when you're doing these kinds of things, you know, it's really sort of at the heart of what this podcast really is about. Is there something when you get into a room with someone who has gone through something that you have gone through as well? It's kind of hard to explain. There's a peace in knowing that the person sitting next to you gets
yes.
it.
Yes, there's a source of comfort in it.
Yeah.
Like, I know we've had two training sessions. We train once a month, and even if people aren't in, the fathers aren't in the 37, they're still welcome to come down and train. If they've lost a baby, they're welcome to come down and train and just mm-hmm. be part of that group. And sometimes, like, I'd be speaking beforehand to the group, and people don't have this talk back, but they know they're comfortable being in there because they know it's not somebody, I suppose it's not somebody lecturing them about what's happened. They know that this has happened to me, and I'm in the same situation as everyone else. Well, that's mm-hmm. what I'm trying to get across to them anyway. And some people might talk about their angel. Some people might just be happy to sit there. Yeah. And then when they go out and have a game of football, they're soon quick enough to start kicking you and forgetting about things. But it's really good. And that's what we're trying to get across in the football.
I think one of the things, Tony, that you're particularly mindful of is with people at different stages of yeah. the grief process there. So with people who may have lost, maybe I lost Molly 5 years ago in April, but there's people there who were very early on in that mm. journey. So I think Tony does a great job of being very careful not to force anybody to talk mm. because there's people who maybe are still in those very early stages of grief and they're just not ready yet. But the fact that they're there, the fact, to Tony's point, that they feel comfortable in that environment, that they're with people who've been through that, mm. maybe they can take some solace from the fact, from seeing people who are just that little bit further down the road. Mm. And, you know, if that helps, then that's a great thing as well.
And I think that's, we had a guest very early on the podcast. I think maybe the second episode, actually, who talked a lot about losing a child and going to an event of some kind. And there was a family who had lost a child. They were 10 years down the line. And that was the thing that got him through, because he saw that they were still alive and they were still functioning and they were actually happy. There was things about them that he hung on to for those years to go, that there's a tiny light somewhere, that this will get easier, not ever be okay, but easier. That was the thing. And I think a lot of times, just like you're saying, being in a room or a group or on a pitch with people who are at different stages can actually be very beneficial, because you're seeing the different stages that you might be in going forward.
Yeah, that's very important, because I remember when we attended our first couples counselling for Feilacon, and I was looking at the counsellor saying, I wish I was where you were,
yeah,
you know, through that grief. And the thing that she told us, and always stuck with me, is the grief will always stay with you. It's just that you learn to live with it. At this moment in time, you just can't see past the grief. Mm. But eventually life, like, if grief is that size, and say you use a fist for example, eventually life grows around it. The fist will always be there.
Yeah.
And it's like saying, and I wish I was them. And now people are in their football game, like, I'd know a bit more information. There's people that have lost a baby within a few months, or there's people that have lost a baby 5 or 6 years ago, or there's people that have lost a baby 15 years ago. Mm. You know, for me, I get dragged back into the grief when I'm having a bad day. You know, something goes wrong in work, or you're feeling sick, the grief suddenly comes back at you. And it's just been a way of trying to learn how to, you still have to learn how to live with it. And it's a difficult thing.
I think we had Breed Shine, who is a woman whose speciality is dealing with neonatal and stillbirth loss. And I mean, was our episode last week. And she talks, and I really came across so strongly in the interview about the depth of loss of a baby, that it is not, it's like nothing else. It's a deeply, deeply, deeply difficult thing. I get emotional thinking about families having to go through that. Felicon, I didn't know very much about the services that were available or how the process works at all until last week. I had no idea the different things that were in place. I found it a comfort to know that there were things in place, and that there was support. Can you talk a little bit about what that process is like, and what families can, if they have experienced that, what do they go through and the afterward kind of time?
Well, Felicon, I wish we never found out. I wish I never knew anything about it. And everybody's in the same way. I know when it happened to us, none of my family knew about Felicon, and they were like, "What is it? What is it?" And they couldn't even pronounce the word. They were calling it Felician and everything. Felicon is obviously the word for butterfly, and that's what we see in Irish mythology. When a child dies, they used to turn into a white butterfly, and that's where it came from. We find it a great source of comfort. Even when the other two children, Sam and Grace, see a butterfly, they'd say, "Oh, there's Erda." So we always find that in a comfort. I suppose like Felicon's only around since 2009, I think. So before that, there was basically nothing for bereaved parents that went through this. A group of bereaved parents came together and set her up. The immediately what they do is they'd have a cuddle cot in every hospital in Ireland. And what a cuddle cot is, they've hand knit blankets and hand knit clothes that you can dress your baby in for the funeral if you wish. They've teddy bears that you can hold on to one teddy bear and you can place the other teddy bear in. You can take a locket of hair and bring it home with you in the box. They've now moved on to foot and hand prints, where you can go in and take the baby's hand and footprints and get that made into clay for you. They've a camera, because when this was first handed to me, I just wanted to throw it back at them. I was like, this is no use to me. But they have a camera there, because what you have to remember is it's your only chance. If God forbid, this happened to a friend of mine afterwards, and I just told him, the one thing to do is just take pictures. Mm. You know, you're only going to get those 3 days. And there's a lovely charity out there that professional photographers come and take pictures. I can't think of the name of it. That lady, when I rang her, that lady just dropped everything and says, "I'll be into you in the afternoon," and she was fantastic. And we have them pictures up throughout the house now. Mm. So if it does happen to anyone, and unfortunately it's going to keep happening, it's just take photographs and ring the charity. The stuff that happens later on through Felicon, where you can go to couples counselling, that was tough. Not the counselling itself, but actually having the bravery to go to it. Like we went to the hotel, and we just wanted to run until this lovely Cork woman came over to us. Don't tell her I was called her lovely. I'll never hear the end of it. But Marty came over to us, and she was great to us. And we went to a room. She spoke. Another lady was with her. Could have been Jacinta, another lovely woman. She spoke. And then she just left the floor open, and you'd think that it was like, I remember speaking to Mike yesterday, you think like nobody's going to talk, but suddenly people do start opening up, and it was mainly the women, and that's getting back to this why we started opened the football game, but it was mainly the women that spoke and just shared their experiences. And I remember being in the room, the one thing that stood with me is, wow, this isn't, it just didn't happen to us, this happens to other people. And you'd be hearing the other stories, and you'd be crying listening to their stories. Mm-hmm. And people wouldn't believe you. After a few weeks, we could be leaving that room, just the safety of that room, we could be leaving that room having a laugh and a joke with people, because our barriers were down. We didn't have to have any barriers up with them, because it was all the same. And I'm so glad. I think it was everyone in their group went on to have a rainbow baby, another baby, and that was really good. And I love meeting up with them all at the summer service or Christmas service, and seeing how they're angels have grown, because I can't remember their names, but I always remember their angels' names, and they're the same. They just refer to me as Arthur's daddy and Arthur's mammy, and that's the way it is.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
That's so nice. It's I think that's so nice to hear, because as a parent myself, you know the way you become the kid's parent, right? That's it. Nobody knows each other's names on the playground, and it's so nice that those kids' names are still being said and you're still hearing it and someone else is still using the names. That's like so important.
One of the reasons why it's so important for us to run out onto that pitch with our angels' names on the backs is that you really get very few opportunities to speak their name.
Yeah.
And that's one of the hardest things to deal with, is because they're still your child. You still want to remember them, but you don't always want to be remembering them in a negative way.
Of course.
And there's so many negative connotations associated with the name that you can see people, when you meant, they'll bristle, or they're preparing for something very, very tragic to be said. Whereas what you really just want to do is speak the name of your child and hear other people say their name as well. And there's a lot of comfort that kind of comes from that. But I mean, our experience with Failacom was very similar to Tony's, which was, you know, you're in this horrific event that you cannot prepare yourselves for, and you're in shock. And you don't know what's going on, and you don't realize how important those 3 days are, to the point that Tony made. And it is so easy just to kind of curl up in a ball and just let them pass without doing any of the things that ultimately will become really, really important to you. And when the bereavement midwife handed us the memory box that Failacom provide, you know, that was very, very similar experience. You know, at first we were like, what is this? We don't. And then as we started to understand, as we started to be guided through the process, we realized this is our one opportunity to create these memories. And we got our elder son in again at the advice that we were being given. He got to hold Marley in his arms. We got some beautiful pictures. He has one on his bedside still to this day, and he still talks regularly about his sister, just as he does about his younger brother. And all the footprints that we have and all of those memories that we created, that is a huge source of comfort to us as well. And quite often I'll come home in an evening and my wife will be sat upstairs and she'll have the memory box out on the floor and she'll be looking through all of these things as well. And in that memory box then are leaflets and materials helping introduce you to what Failacom do. And that's how we learnt then about, you know, the support groups, which like Tony, you know, we started going to. Very difficult at first, but then as we started to hear other people's stories, as people started to listen to our stories, as we started to form friendships within the group and become a support outside of the group, either through, you know, the Facebook group that's set up, or just through out of these Failacom setting meetups with the people, you know, again, that was a huge kind of support for us, and very much inspired my wife, who now, you know, works with them and helps run the groups. I'm not involved to that degree. I'm obviously involved in the football. I've done some fundraising for them in the past, but I have a massive amount of respect for what they do, and really for the difference that they make to people who are just going through this horrific time.
I have to say, I'm like, it's so incredibly reassuring to know that there are people out there in this world who are putting such great care and thought into helping people through this process, because we hear so much negativity about how things work in hospitals and health systems and different things like that. And even with grief, you hear a lot about people just kind of really being abandoned and not knowing where to turn. And hearing that there's such an importance put on this, I think that's a really wonderful thing to hear. When you talk, you know, you both mentioned like men and grief, and I really, you know, we actually don't get as much of a chance to talk to men about grief, because they're probably a little bit more hesitant to come in and chat about it, for the reasons that we know. In society, there seems to be this difficulty to talk thing, and it's becoming more and more part of the conversation around mental health, especially in Ireland. But I wanted to ask you both, from your own perspective and from your own experiences, why do you think, first of all, do you think the conversation is changing? Do you think things are moving into a place where men are feeling more comfortable? And also, if not, why?
Well, that's a difficult one. I know in our game, part of the issue is we're trying to bring men's mental health onto the playing field, and that's part of our tagline with the game itself. Do men talk in general, or is it getting easier? Not really, I don't think so. I think that's men have to be strong, and it's taken me a few years to get to the point where I am now. I remember when it first happened, and I wouldn't have been able to talk about it the way I am now. I was seen as, people had asked me how I was, I'd just say, "I'm Grant," and then they'd move on and talk about Claire, and I was able to speak about her grief a little bit more easier, because I think going through, this might be wrong to say, but going through the evolution of time, men were always seen to be the protectors of the family. And when something like this was happening and it was taken out of our hands and we weren't able to do that, there's some underlying issue with it. And we weren't able to, it's a flaw in men that we weren't able to protect our wife, and we weren't able to protect our wife from this grief, and we weren't able to protect our son or daughter when they were born. And it's something that we try to bury down, that we weren't able to do it. So we're just trying to get it out there now. Listen, sometimes there's nothing you can do. Sometimes it's just one of those things. And I hate all these catchphrases that people come out to you with when they're talking to you in grief, but it's just so hard. If you can speak to a friend or a family member, the typical conversation with someone is, if somebody comes to you and says it, well, for me it was, "Are you okay?" "Yeah." "Do you want to go for a point?" "Okay." And then you talk about anything but the grief that you're in. You certainly don't talk about, you might speak about your wife, or you might speak about this, but you don't speak about your grief and how you're feeling.
And can I ask a question about that? This is something I wonder about a lot of the men in my life. When you go for that pint and it doesn't come up, the thing doesn't come up, but you go for the pint anyway.
Yeah, well, if we tell the wife we're going to speak about it.
But when you sit down and you have the pint and you talk about football, or you talk about, I mean, so I don't mean to like generalise, but you just have a conversation that you said it yourself, anything but.
Yeah.
Did you feel you walk away from that feeling a sense of comfort, or a sense of, "I wish I'd said it," or "I wish that we'd gone there"?
No, sometimes I think just having the support of someone being there, which is sometimes enough. Now, it's not the be all and end all, because you do need more help. But if Mike rang me one day and says, "Do you want to go for a pint and we have a chat?" Look, you go and you'd have to chat, and you do this. You don't talk about your feelings. You don't talk about your grief. You don't talk about what you're going to do next. Maybe in small little things. But for me, like I threw, as Mike mentioned earlier, I threw myself into fundraisers. I threw myself into sports and stuff like that, and that was my way. I became a really keen runner, and I loved that time out on my own, just with a clear head, and I'd be just running along talking to Arthur, and that'd be my way of dealing with it, rather than going and speaking to a friend or a colleague or even the Felicon counsellors.
It's funny how we evolve a little bit. I think the whole talking to someone thing, sometimes people are like, you know, you should do that, and that's the one thing you should do. But oftentimes those things of solace or things you find on your own are actually very, very useful to build resilience and strength, and to realize that in some ways you are the person that will get you through to the other side, because that is how it is. I mean, I noticed myself doing things like going, when I did get time, I would go for a meal by myself without my husband, without my friends, because for some reason I was able to get some clarity in my mind to think about my parents that I wasn't getting when I was having conversations. I always felt like maybe I had to be a certain way in front of someone else. Whereas when you were alone, the conversation could just kind of flow. You know, what in terms of for yourself, like, what was the experience like with trying to get through that with the support of your friends? What was it? Was it similar?
I mean, yeah, very similar. And for myself, one of the main things for me was it was really two things. One was I absolutely wanted to be the rock for my wife. And there's a lot of this talk about being the rock. And people would say that to me. "Oh, you've got to be the rock. You've got to be the rock. You've got to be the rock for Georgina and for Paddy as your son and for everybody else who's been impacted by this." But I think the other part of it was, I mean, 2 weeks later, I had to return to work. And going back into work again was extremely tough, because it was very awkward meeting. Everybody knew what had happened, because, of course, they knew we were pregnant. They knew whether we were going to, you know, expect it. And it was extremely awkward. But then beyond that, in order to protect myself, in order just to be able to do what I do every day and go to work and get through it, I had to normalize things as quickly as possible. So I found myself kind of acting hyper normal around people to try and diffuse everything, because if people were coming up to me in work, then I didn't know if I would break down. I didn't know if I would, you know. So for me, it was like, I want work to as quickly as possible return to normal. And then outside of work is where I would really need some support. But it's not always easy, obviously, to do that. And like Tony, you know, I threw myself into exercise and running and fitness, thankfully, because I think there's a lot of different paths you can go down. And I'm glad we both found, you know, the kind of path through exercise. But I think part of the problem with grief is, and it's obviously not just limited to losing a child, is if people come up and want to talk to you, you could be in any one of several different emotional states at that time. One time you maybe don't want to talk. The next time you maybe do want to talk. But if you rebuff someone once, the likelihood that they're going to come back and try a second time, particularly I think with blokes, you know, if you're like, everything's grand, they're not going to ask you. Yeah. They're just going to take it as read. You know what? It's fine. That's the signaling. I'll never ask again. And I'd be guilty of that. Yeah. I absolutely know I'd be guilty of that, you know, with other people who've experienced loss, and I might make that first attempt, and if they're like, yeah, everything's fine, I'm not going to go back and ask again. I'll ask them if they want a pint. I'll have a chat to them about stuff, but I won't continue to probe. And what I've really learned through this is that maybe in that one moment they didn't want to talk, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't try again. And then I think the other challenging thing is when you're sharing the grief with your partner, the two of you are going really down separate paths, and hopefully they stay very, very close together for as long as possible, but they can very easily diverge. And then, you know, one is still locked very much in grief. The other one has moved into this kind of protection mode of, I don't want to talk about it as much. I really want to kind of get back to normal. And that can be very difficult. Now, thankfully with me and Georgina, we managed to stay along that path. And like Tony was saying, you know, we've really taken what to us is a huge comforting kind of approach of, Molly is in every room in our house. There is something, whether it's a little trinket, whether it's a photo of her, whether it's a painting that my wife did or somebody else did for us. She's in every single room in the house. So everywhere we go, it's comforting. She's there. You know, we didn't hide it away. But I know other people who have done that and would prefer not to be reminded every day and only be reminded when they're ready, when they're in that state. So I think people find their own way. But I mean, like Tony, you know, I do think from the perspective of men, I do think it is still difficult to talk. I do think there is still this kind of expectation, whether we put it on ourselves, whether it's coming from society still or not, I don't know, but there is still this expectation that we're the rock, that we should just be strong, that we should just get on with it. And, you know, and most people after the first few weeks would ask me, how's Georgina? And they might not even ask me. They might not even ask me, how are you anymore? Yeah. It would be straight away, how's Georgina going?
And I think that, you know, it's so great that you're talking about the rock, especially in this particular circumstance, because the physical element that the woman has gone through is so big. Mm. But you could also, I could see very easily how someone could hide behind the questions about your wife or your partner, very easily hide behind that, because just like you said, people, the first thing they're going to ask is, how is she? How are the kids? And they might not ask about you for fear of not even knowing what the answer might be, for thinking or assuming that you might not want to go there, and making it easier to just talk about the other people involved rather than talk about yourself. And I, you know, from the men in my life, I've seen them kind of hide behind those things sometimes because it's easier to talk about other people, and it's easier to talk about the other people who are involved in the situation. I have to say, one of the things I think so great about what you guys are doing, and really kind of actually, I think, quite innovative in grief space. Oftentimes, you know, you guys talk about there's lots of support groups, or there's Facebook groups, or there's places to talk, but there's not a lot of action, like physical action. Or, I mean, I know there's, you know, these kind of large fun runs or runs or different things like that. But with grief, that actually doesn't probably, that sort of doesn't really meet all that often. Tell us a little, just you know, as we wrap up, just tell us a little bit more about the event itself in May and what people should know about it.
Well, it's the 30th of May with a 3 p.m. kickoff. Now, as of the moment, it's in Daly Mill Park, but that might change to Talca Park. We'll have to keep you informed on that. It's it might clash with a League of Ireland fixture, but for the time being, it's Daly Mill Park. This is not going to be a sad occasion. This is going to be a joyful occasion. We're going to have all the siblings there. We want to try to get as many people there as possible. We want to have things for the kids. We want to have an ice cream van, some bouncy castles, face painters, everything that when my kids turned around to me and said, when Grace and Sam turned around and say to me, wasn't that a great day we had out for Arthur?
Yeah.
And Mike could be the same when his kids are talking about Molly. Wasn't that a great day we had out for Molly? And we want to try to get as many people there as we can. We're not doing a ticket event. If people would like to make a donation at the gate, they're very welcome. We just want to see crowds there. I know walking out the tunnel with the jerseys on for the first time, it's going to be really special, really emotional. Don't think there'll be many of us not crying. What I found out through the WhatsApp group that we set up just for everybody there, it's actually I'd call it the birthdays, I don't call it anniversaries. It's actually the birthdays of two of their angels are on the very same day. And they are thrilled to be playing it that day. And there's actually, we won't mention any names, but there's one father's wife is due on that day for their rainbow baby. And he said he couldn't play the match. And I was going to throttle him at first when he says, what, you gone away on holidays or something? He says, no, your wife is due that day. And I says, well, that's the best reason in the world not to play a game. He's a main striker, but we might forgive him if he's in Hollis Street or somewhere like that. Like, we couldn't be happier. And the things that go through my head is, we'll still have the jersey there for you, and if we score a goal or something, we'll run over and get the jersey. Like, I've thought about this game so much, it'd be such an anticlimax if it doesn't go ahead with what's happening at the moment. So, if there's people there, there's obviously, any money gets raised goes to Felicon, and every penny got raised because we got a sponsor on to cover our costs in Dublin Port, which were so supportive and so thankful for them to come on board. And a few other sponsors have come on and given us a set of jerseys and stuff like that. And people are taking ads out in the programme, and it just means all the money raised to be gone, because we're trying to give back to Felicon for the future generations to come into this. I think I mentioned earlier, I think I called the memory box a cuddle car. Obviously, the thing that you give out in the hospital is a memory box, but they do cuddle cots as well. It's like an isolated, it's like a cot where it has a freezer underneath, so you get to bring your child home from the hospital if you want to bring them home for a couple of days. They didn't have that back when we lost Ireland in 2013, and a lot of the money goes to pay for them, because they're not cheap, and it's something special for them to be able to bring their child home and into their house and say, you know,
you were here
and you were a part of us, and it's and I wish we could have done it, and it's just a really great thing. So if anybody would like to come along to the game, or I donate page, I'm throwing all this out, but as I said, all the money will go to Felicon. But we'd just love to see as many people there on the day as possible.
Well, we'll put up some links, anything you guys have when the episode comes out.
Thank you very much.
Not to get too mushy on you both, but I think you're setting really wonderful examples for your children and for future generations of men who are going to be faced with different things. I think it's truly remarkable. I thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.